Welcome to Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunanada. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. Our guest today is Pat Ningwants from the Ojibwe community of Lac Seul in Ontario. She's an Ojibwe language instructor at the University of Manitoba and is the author of Speaking Gukum's Language and other books on Ojibwe language education.
Bonjour. Wabi bishiki kwendish nikas makwando dem. Bishu gokang jenikate gaunjibayan. Inc. My name is Patricia Ningwants Nado, and I am Bear Clan, and I am from a place called Lac Seul, Ontario, in Canada. I live in Winnipeg, even though I'm from Lac Seul, Ontario. I've lived in Winnipeg for almost 30 years now. I have a son, my Ingan Linklater, and I have a grandchild who is with me today. His name is Andik. His Ojibwe name is Kunikijik, and he helped me drive here today. I am an artist. I work in fabric and acrylic painting, but I am a language teacher. I've been involved in language all my working life, and I publish books now. That's what I do for a living. I write language books and I publish them. I wrote a book called Pocket Ojibwe, which has been translated into Inuktitut Cree, that's the swampy Cree in northern Canada, and also in a language called Oji Cree. And I just signed up a Dene writer, so she's going to write a Dene version. And it's also being translated into Plains Cree, which is spoken in Saskatchewan and Alberta. So that's something I'm very proud of, because young people come to me and they say how much they appreciate the books, because it introduces them to the language. When it seems like a huge task to learn a language, you know, the way most of us have to learn languages as adults, it's a daunting task. So to be given phrases to start off with, that's a good first step to get your toes wet, kind of thing. The other book is called Talking Gukum's Language, and that one I use at the university where I teach as a sessional with its own workbook. So I've been teaching for a long time at Lakehead University back in the past, and then at the University of Manitoba. I started off as a language student myself in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. I took other languages, modern languages. From that, I appreciated what it is to be trying on a new language that's totally foreign, how intimidating it can be to be surrounded by a language that you don't understand. It seems easy at first when you learn the grammar, the easy grammar. They teach you the easy grammar first, and then all of a sudden you realize there's a much more complex, bigger grammar out there that you have to internalize.
And where, for our language learners out there, how do you take that next step? How did it work for you?
I studied those other languages for 3 years in high school, and later on in university, I took French for two more years. But I still can't speak it, because that's the way they taught the language in high school. They just introduce it to you, and then a little bit more each year, and that's it. There's no opportunity to really hear it spoken by fluent speakers. Most of our teachers were not fluent speakers. They learned it in university themselves. So I think the next step is to read books in the language, which we don't have, to see movies that are in the language, which we don't have. So there's a lot of work for fluent speakers today. We have to make these products for language learners. Fluent speakers like myself, I'm 64 right now, 65 in a couple of months, and our days are numbered. Mm-hmm. So we're the last fluent speakers, I think.
Right.
Those who are younger than me, who are in their 50s, they're not as fluent as people older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the situation. That's what the residential schools did right. to our people.
I want to ask what your thoughts for our largely Minnesota, Wisconsin listeners, the differences you see between right now where Ojibwe is at in Minnesota and Wisconsin versus where you're from in Manitoba and Ontario.
It was, I think, where I come from, it's called Lac-Seul. We didn't have access to road access. We mm-hmm. didn't have access to radio or TV until mm-hmm. about 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. We were very isolated. We mm-hmm. had to take a boat into town, a mm-hmm. two-hour boat ride. That's what it was like. And so everybody spoke the language.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the same for a lot of the other places around mm-hmm. around my community. And certainly in the north,
right.
the language was very healthy in other communities, other languages, mm-hmm. the Dene, the Inuktitut,
mm-hmm.
the all the northern languages, I think, were very healthy in those times, but not anymore because we have internet and radio mm-hmm. and TV. TV is the killer. But there are other factors apart from the media. But our languages are weakening.
Right.
We're not, you know, such a rosy picture up there now.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking towards the south for mm-hmm. inspiration because we don't have a program like you have here at Fond du Lac.
Right.
Where a 3-week program is there for speaking in the language only. We don't right. have anything like that.
So kind of what you're saying is that up there might be more for speakers,
yes.
but down here there's maybe a little more innovation in the programming.
Yes,
and,
yes.
That's interesting.
We really need to have material development so mm-hmm. that programs everywhere can use them. When I was here last summer, I wrote a little short skit with my grandson.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about superheroes helping a young woman who gets robbed of her tofu in the corner store. It was really fun. The mm-hmm. the lines were read by the students. And, and all the superheroes get in there and they're bumping into each other and they're mad at each other
mm-hmm.
because one of them wanted to be the hero. It was really fun. So things like that.
This is Ojibwe Stories Gaganunida, a program of Ojibwe culture. Our guest today is Pat Ningwants from the Ojibwe community of Lac-Seul in Ontario. She's an Ojibwe language instructor at the University of Manitoba and is the author of Speaking Gukum's Language and other books on Ojibwe language education. Today we're having a conversation about Pat's upbringing in Northern Ontario.
One of the things that we do on the program is I always ask, especially speakers like yourself from communities that were more isolated when you were growing up, what was life like, for lack of a better term, like this time of year? What kind of things was your family doing growing up?
We lived in the language at home mm-hmm. because my parents didn't speak English
mm-hmm.
and my grandmother lived with us. She was bilingual. She learned English as a child, but my parents didn't speak it, so that was kind of odd. So we just did everything in the language. We worked, and no English was spoken. One time I asked my grandmother, I knew she spoke English very fluently to outside people. I said, why don't you speak English with us in the house since you speak it so well? And she said in Ojibwe, we're not English. We're not from
That's
England.
That's cool. We're not from England.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's my inspiration forever. Both my parents, too.
The community being more isolated, I mean, did you have to more live off the land then? Or?
Oh, yeah. My other relatives went to residential school. I only went for 1 year, 2 years altogether. But the rest of the time, we lived in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I had the rich experience of knowing my culture from my parents 24/7. My mother was a very wonderful storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
She was our entertainment center. she knew about 30 legends, and she would tell these legends in the wintertime. We would hear these from her. So in the summertime, she didn't tell them.
Right.
But she told other stories about how the Sioux mm-hmm. would come and the battles between Ojibwe and Sioux. Huh. A lot of different stories about how they used mystical power to fight each other in their battles. And stories about Wendigo, when Wendigo mm-hmm. arrived in the village. Stories of starvation, stories of other hostile tribes from up north, not just from the Sioux in the south.
Hmm.
Yeah, she was my educator.
Mm-hmm. Was the community kind of fixed in one spot, or did you go different places based on the time of year?
In the winter, because we had to go to school, we lived in town, but we had a house on the reserve. That's where all my other relatives lived.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the summertime, we would move back into the reserve. And my father would fish.
Hmm.
He had a fishing boat. And so we'd go off with other families and go live in the bush for a month, maybe, while the women and children would pick blueberries.
Hmm.
And the men would set the nets and sell their fish to the buyers. Ki pebunk e kenop ma tio kame gung geja ka ink otenank abeding et ink an schnabek no ma tio kam gung ge geja kinta da de bach modas ni mama ban e kinta tsuke e ni mama no kum ke ya ki ken schna ki shaganashimo kantwin ge shaganasha Gishaganashim und Tauxinan and Diang inget Utenanget Gishat Dededash e ki bagito ki nibinenik Ninoitish ki Moisoman Kena e kcha ak Hikwewak Kaya binojiak ki Moisoman We bakung maj nimajam and kikshabaugak. Which go kinano de baganayak, e gooding kinio de baganayak, gi kuskosaman, in maji atoman the sha and gotosu gisha sec, e kiabiki ki takayak, made a sha kabeje ba, e nimawizoman, pinish ki now quick. Bíndis ki níisú de baganeag an gipchímen an bigiwémen zam eki sé dek. Mídis kú e sé bagizó ang, ni bing. Ki teke domna ju, bagizó?
Gégét.
Ja, kino e sikon bagizó men, ki apinó jiri ang.
Zaga eginin?
Aha.
Gégét.
Ja. Ki bé kágamen, ni bé. Inge, bzane gu e... I kiki kop an nibe, I mean, equain, capiche pekagamik, nungum tashkawin. Kishpenu, he went nungum totaman, kika akus, kika onja akus, nibink, we nagamen. We used to work all day and then stop at 2 o'clock, and then we'd come home and then we would swim for the rest of the day. And the water was so clean.
Mm-hmm.
That you could just dip your cup in there and drink from the lake. And you can't do that anymore.
From what you were describing just now, I mean, it was, especially a little bit further north for our Minnesota listeners, the days are even longer, right, in the summer, like maybe 11 o'clock it gets, or not so much?
Not
or?
So, that much, no.
Oh, okay.
We're not that far away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It would start to get dark around 10.
10, okay. Yeah.
10 o'clock it would be dark. At 4 o'clock, we'd get up because, you know, it gets light fairly early. We'd be on the road, on the path by 6. Well, it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You mentioned the fishing was mostly netting, or?
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Did the kids ever, like, Wewe Banabi, like, what is this called? Rod and reel fish or whatever, with a pole?
We didn't.
Oh,
we
okay.
Didn't. We just didn't. We already had too much fish from my dad's netting. And that's what I remember about we had a pretty big fish diet.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever my dad didn't use, sell, we would eat that.
Mm.
And we liked parts of the fish that you don't find in the store, like the white fish stomach.
Mm.
We would cook that. The jackfish.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call it? We call Ganoujie. It pike.
Northern pike.
We would fry the liver with onions. It's just delicious.
Huh.
Totally delicious.
Huh.
Delicacy.
When your dad sold fish, was it fresh or did you guys smoke it? Or
no, it was fresh.
Okay.
He always had blocks of ice. He would make a structure wherever we were because we'd be out in the bush. And he'd have a little shed, I guess. And the ice would be kept in there under sawdust.
Hmm.
And that's how he kept the fish cool. And he would buy from other people, too, and then take it to town. So that's how we lived.
You mentioned berry picking, mostly like blueberries.
Blueberries.
And did you sell those, too, just...
Yep.
Okay.
Those were to sell.
Yep. Huh.
So that's how we made our living.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And then after summer, what did you head back to town?
Back to town.
Okay.
And I don't know how my dad made a living. Mm-hmm. I guess I remember he did a lot of boat making and making snowshoes, sleds.
Right.
He did things like that. Those were the days before welfare.
Yeah.
We always had enough to eat.
Uh-huh.
We were always well fed.
Oh, what about red meat? Like, what was it like?
Moose,
okay.
Oh, tons of that.
But that was mostly like your dad just going out and then coming back with?
My dad didn't moose hunt.
Oh.
My mother did. He was taught not to. It was taboo for him to.
Oh, okay.
To hunt moose. So it was my mom that did it.
Oh, okay. And how would that go? I mean, did she just go out and?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Come back with a moose. And...
like all times of the year? Like even wintertime too?
Yeah.
Or
mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah. And of course, other times she would have her snares.
Mm-hmm.
So we had rabbit. I remember one time we didn't go to school. I think I was 12 that time. So we lived in a bush all winter.
Huh.
So that was a dream.
Really?
A dream year for a kid to just live in the bush with her family for a whole year. No school.
Hmm.
And I remember they accidentally caught a lynx. And we ate the lynx.
Huh.
Delicious.
Huh.
Piju. Okina goanawan. And Pijuan. Midish. Kashi. Bakunat. Nimama. Gemuanan. Piju. Tapsko wabuski. Poguzi. Midish. Shime. Ink. Nibewin ink. A bit away, Bishop. Kego Tavanogi, Kek and the Goman. Manachik, Bishop. Give up man and the show decomit, Bishop. Bread. Gay, dog, gay. Kick a chev nanan. Kego dish, Manachik, the shaggy go and given.
So the year that you're out in the bush, you didn't feel like as a kid there was like downtime? It was preferred to school, I suppose. Huh?
We were never bored. Never.
Yep.
My best friend at that time was my brother, who was two years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived on a point, a long point like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the point, like our house was about into the point like this. It was like a peninsula. Is that what you'd say that?
Yep.
But the point there was very safe for us. That was our playground because no animals could go there, like bears or anything, wolves, and nothing. We were totally safe there.
Huh.
And so we would spend the whole day there.
Mm-hmm.
Lunchtime, we'd come back for a meal. But what my brother and I did was we made a little village by the shore, and we had toy boats and everything. We didn't have store-bought toys. We just used pebbles and pieces of board, and the rest of it was from our imagination. We would have a very intricate storyline, you know, a plot. And this mythical village that we built, it would go on week after week. That was our play, an ongoing play. We would just get totally engrossed in that. it was just never boring.
Mm-hmm. You know? Hmm.
It was a very idyllic childhood. I'm very grateful that I had that. Gotchigo ki mutashi nisho bibone yan I gitam and ink nopim ink bagotcha ink dete ke ink ki kishka akwe gi kenata schneeberg gi patinomen e gitayank ma ink grassy begishin kate mit sko kabegishik nino inta kabenonji yank gi utamenomen ko kaunge gongya yasimen in Taminoganan ink a tau gamigunk chunchigan. Nina to gung yushatomen e kyotaminogiank e mittegon e a senisak. O den and yushatomen ake giwi nananik magatawat e a family tavsko gi gyush ananik aninish nikazuat anin and kamigizuat and sagijik. Kabegijik ko. I gi utamenomen pinch mino any war engagement up can nakamigan nakamigiziwak, you know. Chicken damen can we ka I TV and gi can open the semen can ke masanagan metak ninot can ke kim in the questiok ak nenigigok. My parents didn't drink, so it was very quiet life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When we went back to the village, then we would see some turmoil of that kind sometimes.
Right.
Some families. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The village where we had our house, it was called Ningguan's Bay.
Mm-hmm.
It was my father and his brothers who made their houses together. So that was our little bay.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew up there. It doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, really? Was it flooded or?
No, the flood happened 30 years before that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But my mom died. She was kind of the focus.
Mm.
Everybody began dying. Just my aunt is still living, but she's not there. Yeah. It seems when my mother died, that's when everything kind of.
Right.
Yeah. So we moved into the next bay.
I want to ask you about your mother and the moose hunting. We always think of, Ojibwe communities and even, back then, as men being the hunters. Was it something that was unusual? Was she kind of known for doing this? No. Or?
Well, she was strong. She was a widow when she met my father. She had five children of her own. Hmm. And so she was very physically very strong, not at all like me. And so she supported her own children before she met my father. So she was already very capable. But when she met my father had lost two wives to tuberculosis, and he was told by an elder to not hunt moose, especially if his wife was Moose Clan.
Right.
And my mom was Moose Clan. My father was Bear Clan. So he never killed a moose after that. So she did.
Yeah.
Even though she was Moose Clan, she had no qualms about going hunting and killing moose because that was to feed her family.
Yeah.
Back home, we have women who still hunt. Yeah, with their husbands or sometimes by themselves. It's not something strictly for men to do.
This is Ojibwe Stories Gaganunida, a program of Ojibwe culture. Our guest today is Pat Ningguance from the Ojibwe community of Lac Seul in Ontario. She's an Ojibwe language instructor at the University of Manitoba and is the author of Speaking Gukum's Language and other books on Ojibwe language education.
I think it's also good to hear, like, every day, this is what happened kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, would you feel comfortable just talking about your drive down?
Mm-hmm. Nungum, webakishep ngiwanshka ingdash, kuchiko ki nanu tibayganayak ngiwakushkus, ngiwachi vzita, ngiwachi bijayan, ngiwadish, kuchiko Shost the Bayanak, give my charm and ink my Gibin the Gang, my king, Kitchmokman king, with the Kanokit Maikwe, customs officer. Gagwej Mikun, Adeja in Dick, ink found your lack, dinner, and in the Schwenji Jayan, dinner, Dick, Kinadu Anokina, Kawin, dinner. When I'm teaching, I have a lot of native students. I find that non-native students will not come to class with baggage without having to prove to themselves that they have to learn it, that it's in their blood, that language will come out of them because they're native.
Right.
And I think my native students feel that way, but it doesn't happen that way because we still have to memorize the verbs and learn the grammar, and you know. So there's a block there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big block. I talk with a lot of students, and there's such a big emptiness there if they don't speak the language, because they go to their own community, and if they can't understand what elders and fluent people are saying to each other, they feel shut out, that they don't belong, that they're not part of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
They're outsiders. And even if they look native, they should be even be more able to speak, you know. So I see that all the time. But I keep encouraging them to not give up. What I like about Oog here, they use prayer. Mm-hmm. We use prayer. We emphasize the spiritual part of Ojibwe life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that helps because we ask spirit to help. That seems to unlock sometimes the block, you know. I've only been at Oog for 3 years, and I've seen some students that I met 3 years ago who were just beginning. Today I hear them. They're able to talk in the language. It's very impressive.
That's all the time we have today. I want to thank our guest, Pat Ningwans, for sharing her stories with us. This is Ojibwe Stories Gaganunida. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. To listen again to past episodes of the program online, visit the programs page at kumd.org and click on Ojibwe Stories. Ojibwe Stories Gaganunida is produced by KUMD and the Tribal Sovereignty Institute at the University of Minnesota Duluth, home of the Master of Tribal Administration and Governance, or MTAG, program, where students learn about leadership, law, sovereignty, and management from a tribal perspective. MTAG was designed by tribes for tribes, currently accepting applications for fall enrollment. More information can be found at umdmtag.org. Funding for Ojibwe Stories Gaganunida is provided in part by the UMD College of Education and Human Service Professions and by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.